Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Next guest is Olga Deutsch. She's the Vice President of NGO Monitor, an organization that has long tracked the influence and accountability, or lack thereof, of international organizations operating in conflict zones, from the World Health Organization to the UN itself and beyond. Many of these bodies are tasked with neutrality and humanitarian support, but are they truly? Are they impartial players, or have they become political actors themselves? Let's unpack this with someone who watches them closely. Olga, a very good morning. Thank you for joining us. To begin, international organizations like the World Health Organizations and UN agencies are expected to act with neutrality. From your research and your experience, is that the case?
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me on your show yet again. You're very right? They are mandated, and they were all created with this universal mission and mandate to protect human rights and humanitarian, and give a response to humanitarian issues around the world in the most objective, neutral, and impartial manner, so as to provide equal assistance to whoever is in need. In practice, we see that that is not the case more or less anywhere in the world, but particularly if we zoom in into the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, then we see that that objectiveness and neutrality becomes even more of a grave issue. They, over the years, as you stated, became political actors and political activists. There is an abundance of evidence, physical evidence, that various international aid organizations and UN agencies have cooperated closely with Hamas in Gaza. They were silent and allowed Hamas to dig tunnels over the years, although they knew what was going on. And we know that hostages are being held there. The attacks on Israel continuously take place from these tunnels. We know that many of them cooperate directly with Hamas appointees and Hamas-led ministries. There are currently several programs funded by various governments and distributed through different aid organizations where cash allocations are distributed to Gaza, to people in Gaza, through and together with the Hamas-operated ministries and agencies. So they have not only become political activists, but they have actually become part of the problem, right? And we see this issue culminate in the last couple of days. The news from this morning are that negotiations over the ceasefire are stuck exactly on this issue, the provision of humanitarian aid. Hamas, not surprisingly, continues to insist that part of the ceasefire agreement is that the UNRWA and other UN agencies resume their activities, which only tells us to what extent they're intertwined, right? And to what extent this is a life vessel for Hamas, because this is A, physical material being provided to them, and B, lots of money. Because I want to remind your listeners that humanitarian aid is not provided only as physical aid. Most of us, when we say the term humanitarian aid, we think of flour and sugar and cans and clothes and tents. At least we know that around one third of aid globally is provided in terms of advocacy projects. Political advocacy project. So when you you think in those terms, then you understand that there is actually money that is diverted to Hamas. So yeah, that is part of one of the biggest challenges today when it comes to aid in Gaza.
So how does this impact the trust in humanitarian aids, both amongst the affected population as well as donor countries?
Well, that is part of the problem. The problem is that we have a situation now in Gaza that Israel and U.S. created this new Gaza Humanitarian Foundation as a response, right, to or as an alternative to UNRWA and other UN agencies in cooperation with international aid groups because of all the evidence that they have cooperated with Hamas. But UNRWA, UN agencies, as well as the international community, have been pretty much boycotting this new structure. So we have a catch-22 situation. On one hand, they're not able to grow their activities because the entire world refuses to cooperate with them. But at the same time, the Israeli government, as well as the U.S., refuse to allow the old structures to just go back into place, because we all know what will happen. There is, I believe, very little trust, but the larger picture problem is that there is a grave humanitarian situation on the ground, meaning we do need to figure out a way how to feed these people, cure them, treat them, and so on. There are increasing reports. There was a very alarming article in Wall Street Journal from yesterday, a lengthy one covering how the aid is being distributed and talking about stampedos and people that die in just trying, right? Falling on each other, trying to get to aid, because the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation at the moment only has four distribution sites. What this article failed to address is actually, and in that sense, it was pretty one-sided, unfortunately, is why we are at the situation where we are today. Because no one here trusts that UNRWA and other UN agencies have done or have the intention of changing anything in the ways in which they operated before October the 7th. And no one here is interested in allowing them to strengthen Hamas again.
So 25 minutes ago, I see that UNRWA tweeted this. They say people in Gaza, including UNRWA staff, are fainting due to starvation and severe hunger. People, including children, are dying from severe malnutrition. People are being starved. UNRWA alone has thousands of trucks in neighboring countries waiting to enter Gaza, banned by Israeli authorities from entering since March. The siege must be lifted now to allow our life-saving humanitarian aid in. I mean, that's a very, very strong message from UNRWA. Can you address that?
Sure. I mean, let us remind everyone that Israeli government sort of banned UNRWA, right? And basically says UNRWA is not someone that any Israeli entity will be able to operate with. And this is an acknowledgement of their complicity with Hamas. It is not just putting a blind eye, literally complicity. And there was abundance of evidence where UNRWA teachers held hostages, UNRWA schools and children, kindergarten were used as launching sites and so on and so on. But the question needs to be reversed, right? Why does the UN refuse to internally address the shortcomings over the last few decades, improve any of the vetting and control mechanisms, and figure out a way in which all that aid can, in cooperation with the existing structure right now that is allowed to operate, which is the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, so that all that aid could be distributed. And that begs the question whether UN is more interested in making a political statement rather than providing the aid. I think that a lot of the coverage, you know, is not being put in the right context. If they're so keen on providing aid, and that is their ultimate motive, then why in the world are they not cooperating with the U.S. and the Israeli government and army, which is the only one that can secure all these convoys, right, and trucks, and the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation? And then when you look at the problem like that, I think it becomes even more evident to what extent they are a political activist.
So
many other governments have tried to address this issue, you know, and condition aid to the recognition of the state of Israel and its existence to the renouncing of violence and terrorism. And yet we have UNRWA, UN in its entirety, and UNRWA is just one and the largest agency who used to operate here. UNRWA operates 34 different agencies in Gaza and West, you know, Judea and Samaria, West Bank area, as they call it. Why haven't they addressed any of the issues and any of the evidence that was presented of how flawed the system was.
So we are out of time, but I do need to ask you one final question. Is what needs to change for organizations like the World Health Organizations, like UNRWA, to regain credibility and fulfill their original purpose in today's highly politicized conflict zones?
Well, I think that the world continues to discuss it as a physical problem of what is the best or the most effective way to physically distribute aid. And to my mind, the problem has always and continues to be a political one. If there will be a political will to de-radicalize UN, WHO, and all these structures and basically get them to a place to understand that the only way that we're going to move forward on the issue of humanitarian aid, but also in general, right, is if both sides understand that the other one is not going anywhere. Now, the Israeli side, whether we like it or not, understands that. And the Israeli government and the entire establishment does not denounce the fact that the aid needs to be provided. There needs to be a solution, that we will have to make concessions, right, in order to achieve ceasefire. That there is no such, I think that there is a broad understanding that there's no such scenario in which we win or we lose. Nothing is in absolute terms. But on the other side, we don't see anything in the same direction. The other side completely and absolutely refuses to recognize the mere fact that Israel has the right to be here.
Absolutely.
Right? And I think the moment that there is a political will in the international community, and that will be translated into demanding and conditioning that moving forward, if you do not recognize that both sides have the right to be there, and if you do not denounce violence as a method, as a means, we will just keep stay in the same basically in the same spot. And you know what is the worst part of that? To the gravest effect to the Palestinian people.
Absolutely.
They are the biggest victims of this situation.
No question about that. We do need to leave it there. Olga Deutsch, the vice president of NGO Monitor, share your thoughts with me. 061-895